So first of all, I want to thank the organizers for the invitation. So all of them, of course. So I have some transparencies, but I think I'd rather write on the blackboard so that I'll give you really very short things. Yeah, that's. I think it's better. I'll try to give you like an overview of some of the results during at least the last 10 years, and especially the last 3 years. Of the Boltzmann. Okay, so I just start by writing what is the Boltzmann equation. Okay, F is depends on Tx, V is the density of particles. So T will be in R plus, X can be in some domain omega, and V is in Rd, and omega is in Rt. So the first term is just the transport term, so this was recalled in one of this morning's lectures. So I'll just go very rapidly on the expression of B. I don't really want to get a lot into what is exactly this quadratic term. I just give you what are the important things we need. What are the important things we need for the hydrodynamic limits about that? F1 is f of v1. So V prime 1 and V prime, this is V1 minus and this is V okay, so the way you have to think about this is that you have two particles coming with velocities v prime 1 and v prime, and they have a collision, and they give particle which has velocity v1 and v. And we assume that we have, I mean, if you assume that you have conservation of energy and conservation of momentum, then you see that you have this system where omega, which is in SD minus 1, is a parameter. Okay. So I don't really want to spend a lot of time also about what is this Boltzmann kernel. So there are some hypotheses to put on it, but the only thing, the only important things to remember about this is that it is it's local in T and X. So here it depends only on, so you can assume that T and X are fixed here. And then when you integrate in V, so if I take and they put 1 V or V square dV, then this is equal to 0. Okay, so this is conservation of mass, conservation of momentum, and conservation of energy. So this really comes from these particular expressions we have here. Okay? So this is one of the important things. The other important thing, which is the fact when you put log of f here. So when and you integrate in dv, then this has a sign. Okay. So and this is very easy to see. I mean, it just uses. I think this is very this is important thing to write. It, at least it shows you how you can deal about how you can deal with the symmetries of v v1 and v prime v prime 1 v1 v. So let me just show you this very rapidly. So this you can write as, so this is dv, dv1, and you can write it actually 1/4. Let me put minus sign here. So here you have B. Oh yeah, I wrote them already. So you have to add B. Okay. And so this has a sign using convexity inequality. Okay. So now the problem of hydrodynamic limits is actually one of Hilbert's problem. So everything, I mean, people, I mean, if you go even to papers of Maxwell, you can see that he derived some hydrodynamic limits. And he even computed the viscosity. He has some formulae for the viscosity. And so let me show you how we can get fluid mechanic equation from that equation. So F here depends on TXV. If we want to get fluid mechanic equation, it's better to have things which only depend on T and X. So to get things which depend on T and X, you have to integrate in V. So that's very simple. So if I, and I have to use that property. So now if I multiply the equation by 1, V or V square, and I integrate in V, then I will get the following equations. So that's the first one. So this looks like fluid mechanic equation if I define, so rho now is a function of T and X, and rho u is the integral and 1/2 of rho u square. Plus d over 2 rho theta. So if I define this, so the density, the velocity, and the temperature, then those are exactly the terms I should put here. But you can see that here you have terms which you cannot express in terms of rho u and theta. So we have to close our system. And I mean, I can try to compute the integral of f v to the q, but then I have v to the 4 here, and so on. So there is no way of closing the system. However, if I assume that, so now if I assume that f has some special form, so if f of px v has a very special dependence in v, which is of the following form, so u is depends on t and f. So if I make this assumption, then it's easy to check that those are exactly the numbers you get when you integrate f v square. So you get exactly the numbers you have here, rho u and theta. And now you can also compute the terms here. I mean, that's just simple computation. And what you end up with is compressible Euler. So you end up with, okay, let me use the same notations. So this is very simple. That's just, first one is, so that's what you end up with. Of course, I mean, this, if I make this assumption. So now you can ask, is there a way of making this, of making a theorem out of this? Of course, there is. Let me give you the first rigorous result for this derivation is due to Kaflisch. So there is another thing you can, I mean, which is very simple to remark, is that if, I mean, there is an equivalence of B of F, F equals 0 is equivalent to the fact that, so let me call this M rho U theta of V is equivalent to the fact that F is, okay? I mean, if you have this for all v, so then you can find rho u and theta such that f is given by that. Okay, so yes, right. This goes back very. This is very old. Of course, then there are proofs now which depend on what is the regularity for f. So under some regularity, There are nice proofs of to prove this under weak regularity assumption on that, of course. Okay. So how now can we make a rigorous theorem? I erased the Boltzmann equation, so I wanted to keep it, but okay, I will write it again. So now if I put 1 over epsilon here, formally, if you put 1 over epsilon here, this will make B of F, F equal to 0, which means that this will make F equal to something of this type, and then you hope that you get this equation at the limit, and that's exactly the theorem of Kaflisch. So what he proved is that if you have, if you are on some time 0 capital T, and you have a regular solution of compressible Euler, then you can construct a solution of Boltzmann as epsilon, which is close, which converges to that solution when epsilon goes to zero. Okay, so here I defined I introduced epsilon. Epsilon is the Knudsen number. Okay, so which is exactly the mean free path. So I mean, it's a scale. I mean, you can see it as a small scale in X. You can see it as a small scale in X. So here you have like 1 over X. 1 over X is like 1 over epsilon. So this is small scale in X. Okay? So this is the first theorem, and this is 1980, I think. So then, second question is, how can we get now incompressible equations? And this seems a little bit more complicated, especially how can we get viscosity? So here we have only one derivative in X. So we have V, we have only one derivative in X. However, there is a way of getting viscosity term by applying it to two times. So let me now show you how we can get other models. So I write the equation again, and I will tell you what I mean by the numbers I'm writing here. And they will take F epsilon to be of the form M epsilon M. So let me explain all these things. So here we can also define, we have the Knudsen number, but we have also the Mach number. And clearly here the Mach number is equal to, I mean, it's of order 1. Since at the limit you get this equation which has Mach number equal to 1. So to get incompressible models, you have to take a Mach number which also goes to 0. Right? And in this setting, epsilon to the q is the Knudsen number. Epsilon to the m is the Mach number. And here, epsilon to the s is just the scaling in time. Okay? Epsilon to the s is scaling in time. Okay? And actually, there is another number which is the Reynolds number, but it's the Reynolds number is just is equal to the Mach number divided by the Knudsen number. And actually we'll see it coming as the viscosity. I mean, that's how we get the viscosity actually. So I mean, I don't want to really to explain why we have this. The reason why the Mach number is epsilon to the m, this is very easy to see. I mean, V is of order 1. Think of V as of order 1. However, the velocity, the fluid I mean, the fluid, the average velocity, the fluid mechanic velocity will be of order epsilon to the m, and the Mach number is really the ratio between both. So that's why you can think of the Mach number as epsilon to the m. Okay, so now depending on these small parameters, one can get different fluid mechanic equations. So if I take q equal 1, m equal 0, s equal 0, so that's exactly what I explained before, this gives compressible error. Now if I take Q equal 1, M S equals 0, here we get acoustic waves. So acoustic waves is just the linearization of Euler. Acoustics is just the linearization of compressible Euler. So it's exactly, you take this system and you linearize it. So what do I mean by you linearize? Oh yeah, I should have said what is M here. Sorry about that. So M is M101. Okay. M is 101, and now what I so let me just write it for okay. So these are, this will be the integral of f v. And this will be the integral. Yeah. This is what replaces theta there. Okay. So you. It includes v square over 2, but with some rescaling. Okay. So then the system you get is exactly this one. So this will give you, when you linearize it, it gives you rho plus theta plus, and here you get d plus 2 over 2. Okay. Okay, so that's, these are the acoustic waves. Here? You mean in this case? Yeah, in this case you are close to a fixed Maxwellian. I mean here in this case you are close to a fixed Maxwellian, but you have a scaling, a compressible scaling. So you don't rescale time, so you see the acoustic waves. They are not average. I mean here the Mach number is So now I'll get to the incompressible models where so here there is some maybe I can speak also here about rigorous results. There is rigorous result of Bardos, Golds, Livermore, I think 98, but they take M bigger than 1/2, right? I mean, what I mean by rigorous result is global result of really rigorous conversions. Okay, so if you take and you rescale time, here you get the incompressible Navier-Stokes system. And actually, I will call it incompressible Navier-Stokes Fourier because you have also an equation for theta. So what you get you have incompressibility condition. And you have an equation for theta. Which is the temperature. And there is another relation which which is what we call the Boussian X relation between between rho and theta. I mean, this relation, you can see it all, you can see it very easily from here. Like, you have the acoustic waves, so this somehow in this scaling you will put 1 over epsilon here. So when you put 1 over epsilon, this will make rho plus theta equal to constant. And then you work a little bit hard, a little bit more, and you can prove that it should be equal to 0. Yeah, so rigorous results here. So it starts with, I think Bardot's course, Livermore, and there is also De Massy, Esposito, and Leibovitz. The same period, like 92 or something, De Massy, Esposito, and Leibovitz. And and then, so there is work by Lyons and myself. And I think the best result here is due to Gauss and Saint-Rémy. Where we have really a rigorous proof of convergence from Boltzmann with those scaling to that system. So since I don't really want to get into explaining all things about renormalized solution, I don't want to say exactly what I mean by rigorous. It will take a lot of time to explain what are renormalized solutions. So now if you take M bigger than 1, S equal 1, then you get Stokes Fourier, which is just the linearization of the system I wrote above, right? So you don't have the nonlinear terms, okay? And you have another scaling where take U bigger than 1, say M equal 1, S equal 1, and here you get incompressible Euler. So here there are also some results. So there is goes back also to Bardot's Gauss, Livermore, for myself, and here we have also, and I think also the best result is due to Saint-Rémy here also. Okay, so X. Now I'll get to that question just now. Yeah, when you do all these things, like if you do them formally, you can be in any domain. All of these results here, they deal with either the torus or the whole space. So there is nothing about boundary conditions. Okay. So now I'm going just to explain a few things about boundary conditions. Right. Yeah, but it depends how you. It depends on the shape. Yeah, the shape of your initial. The length scale. If you are in the torus, say you are in the torus, so you have a length scale which is L, which is fixed, and then the Knudsen number is exactly the mean free path divided by L. Right. So that's mean free path divided by L. Right. So in the whole space, you have also, you can define a length scale L, which has to do with V. It has to do with between V and the time. So you have V the time, and then you can define a length scale, like a macroscopic length scale. Okay. Versus the microscopic length scale, which is the mean free path. Okay. So now let me get to
Natalie Sakic.
So
she's about trying to understand what happens on the boundary. So this is a work with joint work with Laure Saint-Rémy. So let me explain a few things about the boundary. So imagine you work, now you take this equation, and for simplicity, I look at this case, not to worry about nonlinear terms. Just to explain to you, because, I mean, getting the boundary, getting what happens on the boundary, I mean, we can do it in these two cases. Here, I think it's very difficult. We have no idea. It has already the problem of going to the limit from Navier-Stokes to Euler. So let me define. Okay, let me write sigma, which is the boundary. Okay, and then you can define sigma plus. Sigma plus or minus. Okay. So sigma plus is the outgoing particles. So here you have the normal. This is n of x. This is v. So a point like this, x, v, point like this, x, v, will be in sigma plus. So that's outgoing particles. So here, sigma plus. And sigma minus here, so it's incoming particles. And the boundary conditions I'm going to take are somehow general boundary conditions, which, I mean, there are different models to give. There are different models for boundary conditions, and one of them is what we call the Maxwell boundary condition, and the Maxwell boundary conditions will be sigma minus. Sigma minus is gamma minus. Gamma minus is what happened on sigma minus, right? So gamma minus, so gamma is the trace on sigma, and gamma minus is the trace on sigma minus. Okay, so I will tell you what happened on sigma minus, knowing what happened on sigma plus. So this will be equal to 1 minus alpha L of, okay, plus alpha k of, where alpha is what we call the accommodation coefficient, which is between 0 and 1. So now I have to explain to you what is L and what is k. So these are, L and k are two models for what may happen on the boundary. So L is just local reflection. So, or specular reflection. So this is just to say that if a particle hits here, it is just reflected. And this is very easy to state. Say that xc is equal x and xv, where there is formula for Rxv, which is very simple. It's V minus 2 V and X and X. Okay? So meaning that the density of particle at this point, the density of particles with this velocity is equal to the density of particles coming here with this velocity. So this is the this is L. And k is the diffuse reflection is the case where the particle has no memory of the velocity with which it reaches the boundary. So it's like the particle hits the boundary, stays a little bit there, forgets about its path, and then is diffused again. And so, okay, so diffuse reflection.
I think it's clear.
So then, for that case, yeah, maybe it's confusing. The way I'm writing things is maybe confusing. This is L of okay, that's better. Okay, so this is equal to phi tilde, no, F tilde, gamma plus of F tilde, square root of 2 pi m. I'm going to take m to be exactly the same Maxwellian as I took before. So let me explain the meaning of this. Gamma plus of F tilde is the integral of gamma plus of f vnx dv. So this is the number of particles which hit the boundary, and then they are diffused, forgetting completely the velocity with which they reached the boundary. So the picture here is, so you have a particle which hits like this, then it will be diffused in any direction, and this has to do with m here. Okay, so that's, and the presence of this factor is just to renormalize things, just to have conservation of mass. Because you can, it's very simple to see that if you take the integral, so positive of square root of 2 pi m b n x, this is equal to 1 dv. And you can also change sign here and put absolute value. So that's just conservation of mass. Okay. So now let me at least give you. Maybe I should, since I still have like maybe 5 minutes. Let me just go to give you this on the transparency very rapidly. Where is the? How does it work? Okay, maybe I should go back to. Okay. So, so the important thing. Yeah, so this I showed you already this, I guess. Okay, so these are the reflection things. So this I showed you. So before stating any theorem, I should tell you what type of solution we are going to work with. So these are renormalized solutions, but I don't want to get into explaining that, which are based on the renormalized solution of Dipernan and Lyons. But then in the case of a bounded domain, this was done by Hamdash and then the real result we use is by Michler. And the important thing in those, in these solutions, is that besides this entropy inequality, which comes exactly from the fact that when you multiply the equation by log, you get a good sign, which is this term is the BFF log F, which has the good sign. We have an extra term which comes from the boundary. So we have an extra term which comes from the boundary, which is called the Darozes Giro information. So this is paper of 67, I guess. And which comes with this coefficient, which is alpha divided by epsilon. So here, in my, I think here, alpha, I will call it alpha epsilon. The coefficient, you cannot see it. The coefficient alpha I defined, I'll call it alpha epsilon, which is also, which may go to zero also. Okay? So then I have this, this expression, which is, of course, I have to define what is H. I think it was not a good idea to use transparencies, because then, so here, this thing here, you can think of it as, let's forget about H, assume that it is square. So it's like you are looking at, on the boundary, you are looking at, epsilon to the m g epsilon, which has exactly the same definition as before, squared to gamma plus of this. And here you take, this is just to denote the average on the boundary, so which uses the fact when you, so let me say what is this. This is just the integral f and with vnx. So this is sort of average. Okay? So the term you have there, you should think of it as the average of the square minus the square of the average. So H is not exactly X square, it's something which at the limit goes to X square. But let's think of it this way. So the good thing about it is that it has the good sign. Right? By convexity, it has the good sign. So it's not the term which really kills this entropy estimate, which is very important for the existent proof. In addition, this term will be helpful for us to do the passage to the limit. So let me now state the result. So yeah, I have some notation. So so we take some initial data, which is bounded. This term here is, think of it as just a term so that you have the entropy inequality gives you something which is bounded. So H of G epsilon, this is what we call the integral. So I'm going to define again what is this. So I wanted to avoid defining this, but I think minus epsilon mg epsilon. Okay, so that's exactly the definition of H. And this, you think of it as g epsilon square. So you think of this as epsilon to the power 2m 2 of epsilon square. Delta epsilon is epsilon to the n. Okay? Okay, so this is, this whole thing is like an L2 bound for G epsilon. Assume that you have an L2 bound for G epsilon. Okay? And then if alpha epsilon is has the same order as epsilon, which means that alpha here is very small. I mean, most of the diffusion is specular diffusion. Most of the reflection is specular reflection. So forget about this condition. Then the G epsilon will converge to a solution to something of this type, and where you have Stokes equation, an equation for the heat for theta, and where you have Navier boundary conditions at the limit. So at the limit you get here Navier boundary conditions, which relate d theta over dn with theta, or du over dn with lambda u. That's the tangential part of it. So this is exactly the classical Navier boundary conditions. And on the other, the second result is when alpha epsilon over epsilon goes to plus infinity, which case we get Dirichlet boundary conditions. Yeah, I mean, I can give you very rapid just one word about, just one idea about the proof. Okay, so let me tell you where we get the a priori estimate from. I mean, I'm putting, I don't know how to do it, so I'm doing it this way. I was not able to turn it off. So that's why I'm putting it this way. Okay. So as I said, in the entropy bound, we have this extra term. And that term will be helpful. Especially, I mean, we can understand it very, I mean, this term is very, is very helpful, especially in the Dirichlet boundary condition. We can see why necessary this term should be almost equal, and this can only hold if G is equal to zero on the boundary. So, I mean, I don't want to get into explaining that. I think I will not be able to give you a precise idea about the proof. So maybe let me stop here.